the United States is simply headed in the wrong direction. The Torah is the foundation of our legal system, and the Judeo-Christian ethic was the inspiration of our founding fathers, our Constitution, and our laws. If our nation is to survive as a shining light of freedom, we must return to these Torah-based principles. We welcome you now to the Restoring Our Nation broadcast, hosted by Texas attorney and Bible scholar Larry Meadows and Rabbi James Trim.
Welcome to Restoring Our Nation. I'm James Trim.
And I'm Christopher Fredrickson from Sticks and Stones.
Chris today is standing in for Larry Meadows. Once again, Larry Meadows was bogged down with casework and wasn't able to participate in this week's show. For those that don't know, my normal co-host Larry is a Texas attorney, and so there are occasions when he just gets too bogged down with casework to have time to record. That was the case this week. Today we're doing a show on Thanksgiving and what Thanksgiving has contributed to our national heritage. And, Thanksgiving, unlike many of the other festivals, other holidays celebrated in the world, is not actually of pagan origin, like Christmas or Easter or anything like that. Thanksgiving actually was an attempt by the Puritans, the Pilgrims, the Puritan settlers in Massachusetts, to institute a harvest festival made in the image of Sukkot. In fact, it's got a slight parallel in Hanukkah, in that Hanukkah was also a Sukkot, if you will. Larry did send us an email that had a brief statement that he wanted to make about Thanksgiving. Chris, can you read that for us?
Absolutely. And he titled this thing, "Thanksgiving is Not Heathen." It's by Larry Meadows, of course, as James said. "Thanksgiving is not heathen. Thanksgiving is the only non-heathen holiday that is widely observed in the U.S. We have a lot to thank the Pilgrims for religiously and politically. They were persecuted from Europe because Yahweh was and his scriptures were their supreme authority, not the crown of or the Church of England or the Catholic Church. As Americans, our experience is based upon the history of the story of Thanksgiving. The Pilgrims are our intellectual separatists who did not celebrate Christmas or Easter. They did not see a biblical bias or basis for it, and would not truly finish and complete the Reformation in spirit and truth. They were separatists from the corruption of unbiblical practices of both the Church of England and Catholicism. They were persecuted because of this by the Church of England. And James I, the same James who authorized the King James Version Bible of 1611, who was involved in homosexual activities as the head, based on the belief of the divine rights of kings and apostolic succession, for not conforming to the evil of the unscriptural practices of the church. They met in homes, studied straight from Scripture, and believed Scripture, and only Scripture, was the normative instructions, positive and negative, for the life of a believer. They had eldership, made decisions as a community of believers, had property and things in common, wrote pamphlets against the establishment of government and religious systems, and were drawn out of England and Holland for all of these actions. Wow! Their beliefs and actions established the groundwork for the U.S. and its ideals for freedom of worship, freedom of speech, due process, trial by jury. Now we have strayed. The Pilgrims viewed the first Thanksgiving meal at Plymouth as the Thanksgiving offering seen in Leviticus 17, or 7, verses 11 through 13. To Yahweh for giving them safe passage to the new world based on the commandments found in Psalms 107. To give thanks after the arrival of a safe journey on a ship, see Psalms 107, verses 23 through 32. The pilgrims viewed the New World as the Promised Land, where Yah was beginning them to worship him and being persecuted by the government and the establishment of the church. Point is, Thanksgiving is not a heathen feast, as the pilgrims were non-conforming free thinkers guided by Yahweh and Yahweh's word and his spirit, and established a community to advance the practices, to practice the aforementioned ideals in the word and deed. For this I am thankful, because it is hard to imagine a world without people who are willing to break away from the system and do what is scripturally sound and true, even though it was painful, hurtful, and subjected them to persecution, poverty, and the like. This is what I will be thanking and praising Yahweh for this Thanksgiving, for because the pilgrims and Yahweh's power and guidance, we can have independent meetings in our homes and without fear of being persecuted and dragged into prisons for not conforming to the religious and or political majority. And then he has a verse over here in Psalms. Would you like for me to read that, sir?
Well, let's wrap up with that maybe later in the show.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and get into some of the things about Thanksgiving that he's addressed, and about the Puritans. You know, the Puritans were on the right track in many ways. They weren't 100% correct, and few today would think so, but they were certainly on the right track in a number of respects, one of which is that they were, you know, those people out there that would think of trying to ban Thanksgiving as a pagan feast, or that we shouldn't celebrate it. And there are some out there, you know, in every crowd, once you get people going, this is a pagan holiday, this is a pagan holiday, this is a pagan holiday, some of them will just go hog wild and think everything must be a pagan holiday, you know.
I've fallen into that trap myself.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is not. Thanksgiving, the actual original progenitors of Thanksgiving themselves rejected pagan holidays. Now, they didn't take up the biblical holidays yet either. They hadn't progressed far enough along, as Larry said. They weren't the end all and the end game. In fact, they weren't even the end game for religious freedom. The Puritans, when they came to the United States, to the New World, were actually originally as intolerant of others as the Church of England had been of them. You see, they just learned some bad habits from the Church of England. They didn't play well with others. A good friend of mine, Dr. Philip Arnold, wrote, I believe it was his doctoral thesis on this, at Rice University, about how the freedom of religion came up out of all of this, because when the Puritans got here, there were other people that soon showed up. You had the Shakers, for example, and they were clashing with each other initially. And you had instances where Shakers would go streaking naked through Puritan churches, screaming, there's nothing covered that will not be uncovered. And of course, this horrified the Puritans, you know. But in time, they came to this idea and realized, you know, my next-door neighbor and I can get together for a beer, and he's a nice guy. But he's a Quaker or a Shaker, not a Puritan. And out of that grew the religious tolerance that led to the founding of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and the fact that in support of the American Revolution, there was the Black Robe Brigade.
Mm.
And it was actually the British actually targeted American clergy of all kinds. And in fact, there were instances of them gathering, you know, burning churches and, you know, attacking, particularly going after clergy, because the clergy were united, you know, generally speaking. They'd gotten away from some of these ideas about divine right of kings, you know, well, the king is king because God wanted him to be king. if God didn't want him to be king, he wouldn't be king. You know.
Oh, yeah.
So,
this is something that has gone throughout history as well. You know, we can go and look at how certain religious establishments have gone and overtaken this whole thing all throughout history. You know, you can only start with Constantine, but the Spanish Inquisition, Nazism, and so on and so forth.
Now, as Larry said, you know, how far we have come the wrong direction. When all of this was originally about finding a place where you could worship in peace without government interference. The Puritans wanted to be able to worship without government interference. And yet, we are fast losing that with some of the standards that are being set up being used by the interpreters of the Constitution today. There are principles now that basically allow the government to interfere with the freedom of religion as long as they interfere with everybody at the same time. If you see what I'm saying.
Oh, that's true. That's very true.
They have a concept of a law of neutral application which means that it applies the same to everybody. And using that principle, they could theoretically pass a law against baptizing anybody. And then turn around and say, oh, no. It's non-selective. It applies to everybody the same. So the fact that Christians are the only one that would want to baptize anybody becomes irrelevant, because they're saying, well, the law also forbids Muslims from baptizing people or atheists. So it's a law of universal application, or neutral application, except for one thing. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you're right. You know, but see, the thing about it, though, is that in this country right now, what we have right now is what we have is what I've kind of labeled a protected class system. You know, first off, you know, if you were, let's say that you were a Muslim, and you were also Hispanic, black, and gay, then you know what? You want to go and get baptized, that's perfectly fine for your community. Why? Because we don't want to offend.
Well, and that's another issue that's coming along. Our forefathers would be horrified if they saw society today.
Oh, without a doubt.
And if they understood that the First Amendment was being interpreted in such a way as to protect that, because they never conceived of that.
No, not at all. But we could actually twist the Constitution in many ways, as many have, to say, yes, you know, you can pass a law for this. It can be done.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back after this.
Hey, Dad.
What's up, buddy?
You're always on this website.
You mean Nazarene Space?
Yeah, it's the only one you're ever on.
Well, that's because it has a lot to offer.
What do you mean?
Well, when I want to research a topic, there's usually a resource there. Plus, I can chat with my friends, and there's also a brand new radio station.
A radio station?
It sure is. It's the Nazarene Radio Network. I can listen to Bible teachers, talk shows, even music that teaches us all about Yahweh.
That sounds really cool. Is there stuff for kids?
As a matter of fact, little buddy, we're talking about adding programming for families, teenagers, even some dramatized plays that everyone would be interested in.
I think I like that.
Well, Mom and I definitely like that. Good, wholesome, clean programming for the whole family.
No wonder you're always there.
That's right, pal. Let's listen into the show.
Cool.
And we're back, and we've been talking about Thanksgiving and how Thanksgiving and the events that surrounded Thanksgiving have contributed to our freedoms and our liberties. And by the way, there are those that tried to give Thanksgiving a bad name with some false information. I want to real quickly cover that. There is a claim that runs around that the pilgrims, when they came here, wiped out the Indians that helped them. Okay, well, they did not wipe them out, and it's actually the way we have our Thanksgiving story come down to us is a little skewed. What is an amazing providentially showing certainly the hand of Elohim on what took place is this. When the Mayflower landed, and they'd already written up the Mayflower Compact and, you know, set up their covenants and so on. But when they landed, they were greeted by an Indian named Squanto. The only Indian in the entire northern hemisphere, or northwestern hemisphere, you know what I'm saying, in the New World, in North America, that knew English. And the reason he knew English is because long ago he had been kidnapped by slavers who attempted to enslave him. They sold him to Spanish monks who attempted to civilize him and to eventually let him go. And after educating him, and he made his way all the way from the southern quarters of the world where the Mexicans had him, where the missions were, and he made his way all the way back home. When he got there, he found the entire tribe had been killed by smallpox. He was the last of his tribe. Nobody had survived. So Squanto, when the settlers arrived, and right at the location of his former tribe's encampment, his former tribe's village, he saw them as the successors of his people, if you see what I'm saying. You know, the great spirit or whatever is filling a vacuum.
Yeah.
My people are gone, they've all been killed, and the providence of the universe or whatever has sent this people to this very spot to create a settlement. I, as the last of my people, my job is to teach them and pass everything, you know, on that I know onto them about how to make that succeed. And so Squanto did that, and he introduced them to nearby tribes of Indians, none of whom were wiped out, and all of which still exist today. And so the whole thing, you know, that they wiped out the Indians or whatever, it's simply not true. Squanto did die a year after they arrived from smallpox himself. Anyway, that's sort of the truth about what really happened as far as the Indians being wiped out by the pilgrims.
Now you know high school history teachers are going to be very ticked off with you about this when they walk into their classrooms and they end up telling this story and not abiding in the revisionist history.
Yes. And the revisionist history, of course, is that they were wiped out by the... The plague that wiped them out started in 1616, 4 years before the pilgrims arrived. The pilgrims didn't have anything to do with it. But that's not, of course, the revisionist history. So, anyway, Squanto definitely did help them. And they established courts and some basic fundamental freedoms. Hold on just a moment. Sorry. And we wouldn't have much of what we have as freedom today, if it hadn't been for what they did. And George Washington, of course, established a Thanksgiving Day. And then there was another one that was established in remembrance of this after the Civil War by Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And it was FDR actually moved it temporarily, but it eventually it settled on the last Thursday of November.
Now, the interesting thing would be to see the dates that it originally was celebrated. I don't know if you have that information handy or not.
I don't have that handy, although I can tell you that the Canadians celebrated in October, which is far more likely to be closer to the original time period, because that was more of a harvest time.
And very close to Sukkot as well.
And very close to Sukkot. And, of course, the pilgrims had read about Sukkot. And, well, as we said, they were right on track on certain things. For example, Christmas and Easter, they had rejected as pagan long before, you know, Herbert W. Armstrong or the Jehovah's Witnesses or anyone of that nature. And they rejected these things. And, in fact, Christmas celebration was illegal in Massachusetts up until into the 1800s. A lot of people don't know that. Christmas was originally illegal in the New World.
Wow. And what was the basis for the illegality of Christmas?
It was just a pagan, you know, it was pagan. It's just illegal. It was the last state to turn around and legalize it was Massachusetts, because Massachusetts had been a Puritan colony. You know, we've come a long way, because Massachusetts, in 1776 and in 1791, when the Constitution was ratified and so on, the colony of Massachusetts was the most conservative colony.
Mm-hmm. Not anymore.
Not anymore. That's a pretty blue state now, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Even their senator over there is bright blue, and he has an R beside of his name.
The last state to legalize Christmas, and the first state to legalize gay marriage. So go figure that one.
Oh, good.
That's what I mean about, you know, our forefathers would be turning in their graves, you know, particularly the Massachusetts forefathers.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, you know, and to go and see when you read in the history books, you always read about Massachusetts, about this was the place to be during the times of colonization. Now you look at Massachusetts today, and I don't want to upset anybody over there in Massachusetts, but, you know, you guys are having a lot of issues over there. A lot of issues, you know, in your state. Unemployment. The real unemployment rate in Massachusetts, last time I looked, was at 23%. Now that's not
wow.
Now that's the real unemployment rate that includes those who have just quit looking, you know.
The underemployed, like my, I have a relative. I'll just put it that way, rather than say anything that might embarrass the person by giving away their identity. I have a relative who has a college education, worked for many years as a computer programmer. And then when the computer programming jobs went overseas to India, basically ended up unemployed and finally ended up working as a cashier at a CVS.
Oh, my gosh.
She's not unemployed. She's not unemployed.
Now, see,
cashier.
Now, see, the interesting thing is that I have a minority opinion on NAFTA, but right now is not the time for it, but at some point maybe we can discuss that. Personally, really quick, I think it's a gut check, is what I think it is. It should be a gut check to your state.
Meaning
that the economy is so bad in your state and they continue to raise taxes and raise regulation and bring about more regulation, and these businesses say, hey, the heck with this, I'm going somewhere else, this should be able to tell you, hey, maybe you need to change your legislator and your governor.
Yeah, I think that, free trade is a two-edged sword. And free trade is wholly appropriate in a free country. In other words, if I'm a American and I have a buddy in India that has a factory that makes widgets, and I'm in the United States and I distribute widgets for a living, and my buddy and I work out a business relationship and he ships me widgets to sell, well, the government's telling me we can't in a free country. Okay, but here's where you run into the problem. Not everybody's playing by the same rules.
Exactly.
So you deal with that's assuming that everybody else is playing capitalism, which, by the way, really hasn't even been tried here in some time.
You're right.
You've got China, where you have a communist economy there, and what they've done is they've propped it up with money coming in from the capitalist United States. And they've undercut the United States manufacturers with subsidies from a communist regime, okay? And unfortunately, the United States has then been so hungry for cheap consumer goods as to buy everything from China to the point that you can hardly find anything that's not made in China anymore. So that we're sending all of our capitalist dollars over to China, okay? And then China, which should have gone the way of the old Soviet Union. See, the old Soviet Union should have thought of this. They'd still be around. we're sending capitalist dollars to prop up the communist regime in China. And then borrowing the same money back from China to buy more consumer goods from the Chinese. And, this is the sort of thing that we've got to stop.
I agree.
And I don't know how you stop. I don't know if you stop it by limiting trade with China or with huge tariffs. I don't know why the hell we're trading with China anyway.
We need to level out those tariffs.
Back in the 1980s, we would never dream of trading with Soviets.
Oh, absolutely not. So
let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring to you two radio personalities in which you may have heard of, Christopher and JJ Rocks, from Sticks and Stones performing Who Is Me?
I see you're here for your Hebrew lesson.
I'm ready to learn.
Now, the first thing you must understand is that Hebrew and English have many words that sound alike, but they do not mean the same thing.
Sure, I understand.
Now, don't be too quick to say that.
How stupid do you think I am? Wait, don't answer that. It's simple. Some words in Hebrew sound like words in English, but they don't mean the same.
Precisely.
We have that word in English, too. What does it mean in Hebrew?
No. Precisely is an English word.
I didn't come here to learn English. I came here to learn Hebrew, so make it with the Hebrew.
Fine, let's start with me.
You?
No, me.
Fine. We'll start with you.
No, we'll start with me.
Okay, have it your way.
Now, me is who?
You is JJ.
No. Me is who?
You is JJ.
You don't understand.
I don't understand. Did you just say me is who?
Yes, I did. Me is who?
You is JJ.
No, you misunderstand what I'm saying. Tell me about me.
Well, you're a nice enough guy.
No. Tell me about me.
Who?
Precisely.
Precisely what?
Precisely who?
It's precisely whom.
No. Me is who?
Don't start that again. Go on to something else.
All right. Who is he?
Who is he?
Yes.
I don't know. Who is he?
Sure you do. You just said it.
I just said what?
He is who?
Who is he?
Precisely.
Again with the precisely. Precisely who?
No, precisely he.
Precisely he? Who is he?
Precisely.
And what about me?
Who?
Me.
Who?
What are you, an owl? Me? Who is me?
No, who is he?
I don't understand. Maybe he is me.
No, he is she.
Do his parents know about this?
About what?
About her.
What about her?
That she is he?
No, you've got it wrong. He is she.
Then who is he?
Precisely.
Who?
He.
Me?
Who?
He?
She.
Who is she?
No, who is he?
I don't care who is he. I don't know who is she.
No, that's not right.
How can it not be right? I said it. I was standing here, and I said it. And I know me.
Who?
Who?
Precisely.
Me. Me. Is that the you are talking about? He is me?
No, he is she.
Wait a minute. I'm trying to learn a little Hebrew, and now I can't even speak English. Let me review.
Go ahead.
Now, first you want to know, me is who? And then you say, who is he?
Absolutely.
And then you tell me, he is she.
Precisely.
Precisely. Now look at this logically. If me is who, and who is he, and he is she, don't it stand to reason that me is she?
Who?
She.
That is he.
Who is he? Precisely. I have just about had it. You had me confused. I want to go home. You know what I want. Ma.
What?
I said ma.
What?
Are you deaf? I want ma.
What?
Not what. Who?
He.
Not he. Ma is not a he.
Of course not. Who is he?
I don't know. I don't care. I don't care who is he. He is she. Me is who. Ma is what? I just want to go home and play with my dog.
Fish.
Fish?
Bag is fish.
That's it. I'm out of here.
And we're back, and we've been talking about Thanksgiving. And things pertaining to it. One of the things that we had mentioned was that the wiping out of Indians by smallpox. And the rewritten version of the history has been that the evil white man brought disease with him. You know, because over here they didn't have any disease. And so when white man came over here, the Indians were wiped out by disease. Now, granted, there were a number of plagues that took place, but if the white man had brought disease with him when he came to the New World, guess what else would have happened? You would also have had the settlers wiped out by disease, and you would have had plagues of new unknown diseases from the New World make their way back to Europe. And you would have large European populations wiped out at about this same time. All of this theory is built upon the idea that when Columbus discovered America, and that before Columbus discovered America, there had been no transoceanic contact. Well, the truth is, there have been all kinds of transoceanic contact. Are you there?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I'm getting a little echo, that's wrong. Okay, yeah. There have been all kinds of transoceanic contact before Columbus. In fact, Columbus's brother was a map maker, a cartographer. And you know, there were a number of maps that can be found even in museums today of the world made before 1492 that show the Florida Peninsula on the map.
Hmm.
So, not only did Columbus not discover America, but he used a map that he got from his brother to get here. Okay.
Another ratchet into that revisionist history.
Yes. Before Columbus made it to the New World, the Vikings had been here. They called it Vinland. That much is well known. In fact, one of my children, I normally homeschool my children, but one year I had a number of things going on, and we basically decided it was best that year to put them in public school. And I went to go pick up one of my daughters from elementary school, and it was Columbus Day, And the teacher had asked the students, who discovered America? And they all said, Columbus. And my daughter said, it wasn't Columbus. And all the other kids are laughing at her. And so the teacher says, well, fine, who do you think discovered Columbus? I mean, discovered America. And my daughter says, it was a Viking named Erik Leif. And the teacher's jaw dropped. And she said, that's actually right. And the other students stopped laughing, but they were surprised because they'd always been taught Columbus discovered America. So when I picked her up from school, the teacher just couldn't wait to relay this story to me about how smart my daughter was. And she asked my daughter, in front of the class, where did you learn that? She said, I learned it homeschooling. And I told the teacher, that's why we've been homeschooling, because here we are in the public school, and they're teaching that Columbus discovered America when it's been known for years that it's not true. And yet, they're still teaching it.
That's crazy, man.
And I don't want to go into all the things that are not true, that are known not to be true, that the public schools continue to teach. But that's definitely one of them. And before the Vikings got here, the Irish were here, the Chinese were here, and the Phoenicians were here. The ancient Hebrews were here. And I'm not talking Book of Mormon stuff here. For anybody out there listening who might subscribe to the Book of Mormon, or whether there be any question about that, let me set the story straight. I do not accept the Book of Mormon. Okay? But there are artifacts that have been discovered here. And I wrote a whole book about this called Hebrews in Ancient America. And ancient Hebrews the Hebrews in Ancient America, that's what it's titled. And that's available in our bookstore, by the way. You can just go to NazareneSpace.com and click at the top on books and DVDs, and you can get the book. It's fully illustrated. And it goes into some of these artifacts that have been found with Hebrew inscriptions here in the New World. Three Bar Kokhba coins were found in the area of Kentucky. There was something called the Back Creek Stone, which has a Hebrew inscription on it, that was found in Tennessee. A couple of stones with Hebrew inscriptions were found in Ohio. And in New Mexico, there's a great big old boulder just outside of an Indian village, an ancient abandoned Indian village, with the Ten Commandments inscribed on it in Paleo Hebrew.
Now, the interesting thing is, how would they have known this? This is the thing that just, it's just hard for me to comprehend. However, I have looked at the evidence. I know it's true, but it's hard for me to wrap my mind around it.
You know, when Columbus discovered America, when he was making his case that the earth was round, he went to Queen Isabella and made his case. And he cited passages from the Bible to prove his point. The point being that the ancient Hebrews were well aware that the earth was round. Mm-hmm. In fact, when Yeshua says in Matthew 23 that the Pharisees circled the earth, seeking a single convert, that word literally means to encircle. It's the same word that is used in the book of Joshua, where it talks about how they were circling around Jericho.
Wow.
Okay? They literally were circling the earth. There are passages in the Tanakh that make it clear that Solomon's navy was circumventing the planet. There are artifacts that also have been found. There are Hindu temples in India that are very ancient, that date back to pre-Columbian times, that show ears of corn on them.
Wow.
Your ears of corn. Now, I know when you're reading your King James Version of the Bible, you'll see for example, in Matthew 12, that they were picking ears of corn. That's because in Old English, like they used in 1611, corn meant grain. It just meant grain, any grain. Okay? When we came to the New World, they had a previously unknown grain, or a grain not known to Europe, called maize. The Indians called it maize. And we called it corn, simply grain, and the name stuck. Okay? So now in English, the word corn refers to what the Indians called maize. But prior to that time, this was something that was unique to the New World. Clearly, somebody was importing corn to India in pre-Columbian times. Okay? And there's also all kinds of linguistic evidence that indicates linguistic connections between Old and New World languages. So when Columbus got here, he didn't discover America, okay? He simply popularized the existence of the New World to the European world, which had lost knowledge of it to a large extent through the Middle Ages, with the exception of a few contacts by the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
The Phoenicians had trade routes, and there's good evidence to show that tin and other minerals and jade were being imported to the Old World from here. In fact, the Back Creek Stone, there was an article about this in Biblical Archaeology Review a few years ago. In authenticating the Back Creek Stone, they found with the Back Creek Stone a couple of copper bracelets in this Indian burial site. Well, the copper bracelets weren't made of copper, it turns out. They were made of brass. The Indians didn't have brass. They did a breakdown of the brass, and it was of the same composition as brass from the area of the Mediterranean around the first century.
Oh, wow.
So, there's tremendous evidence to indicate, and there was a recent series of tests done on the Back Creek Stone itself by the permission of the Smithsonian Institute. We actually have the tests in an appendix to this book I was telling you about called Hebrews in Ancient America that indicate that ancient Hebrews had been here in biblical times. Not Nephites or Book of Mormon peoples, I'm just talking about Hebrews.
Absolutely. Well, James, it's about time to go to another break.
Okay, we'll be back after this.
Hey, Dad.
What's up, buddy?
You're always on this website.
You mean Nazarene Space?
Yeah, it's the only one you're ever on.
Well, that's because it has a lot to offer.
What do you mean?
Well, when I want to research a topic, there's usually a resource there. Plus, I can chat with my friends, and there's also a brand new radio station.
A radio station?
It sure is. It's the Nazarene Radio Network. I can listen to Bible teachers, talk shows, even music that teaches us all about Yahweh.
That sounds really cool. Is there stuff for kids?
As a matter of fact, little buddy, we're talking about adding programming for families, teenagers, even some dramatized plays that everyone would be interested in.
I think I like that.
Well, Mom and I definitely like that. Good, wholesome, clean programming for the whole family.
No wonder you're always there.
That's right, pal. Let's listen into the show.
Cool.
And we're back. I'm James Trim. And we've been talking about Thanksgiving. Larry Meadows was out today working on, apparently he was bogged down with cases being an attorney. Our substitute for Larry today has been Chris Fredrickson.
Hello, Chris. I'm here.
Chris is our programming manager for the Nazarene Radio Network, and there's some things going on with the Nazarene Radio Network that I thought maybe you could take a few minutes and tell us about, Chris.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'll tell you, I want to first off thank the listening audience for building up not only the Nazarene Radio Network, but Nazarene Space as well. That is our hub. That's our home there, and it's just been a tremendous blessing to be a part of this station and to be able to do the things that we do. And we got a bunch of things that are going to be happening here soon. As a matter of fact, this Sunday we have a couple more. I know you guys have been loving the old time radio. And we got a couple new shows that we've added to Old Time Radio. We got, the Shadow, and I'm trying to remember the other ones that Brother Jim Morgan is putting in there. Beetle Blue is the other one, or Blue Beetle.
The Blue Beetle. Flash Gordon?
Flash Gordon's the other one, that's right.
Flash Gordon, yeah. And how about... there's a detective show. Can't remember the name of it. Nick something.
Okay, he hadn't told me about that one yet, but I'll make sure to go and add that in there.
Nick Carter, I think. Nick Carter, yeah.
Nick Carter
is the original detective, and what I mean by that, the original Private Eye, is Nick Carter was a radio show. He actually was... Smith, which was a pulp publisher in the early 20th century, published stories about Nick Carter. Street Smith actually went back to the 1800s. They've been around for a while, and they started with what they used to call the dime novels, which were back. This is all paperback books.
Right.
The cheap fiction back in the late 1800s and the early 1900s were the pulps, which were the descendants of the dime novels. And the dime novels they were westerns, but they were called westerns because they took place in the West. They were being sold to people that lived in the East. Okay. And they were stories about cowboys and Indians and stuff that was taking place in the West. And as time went on, they also added some stories that were taking place in the East, and one of them was Nick Carter, which was a detective. And his stories started out in the late 1800s, and they just continued to publish into the 1930s and 40s. And he was the inspiration for every Private Eye show that you've ever seen.
Oh, man.
He and Sherlock Holmes. And so he was on the radio.
And later on, you had people like Dick Tracy and quite a few others that followed that. It seemed to be a pretty popular genre, I'd say, probably in the 1950s.
Yeah. I think Dick Tracy was kind of a combination of Nick Carter and Flash Gordon or something, you know?
Yes, right, true. Really cartoonish in many ways.
Yes. So... anyway, I love the old radio shows, so it's great to have new old radio shows added to the mix. And what else is going on? Oh, by the way, Nazarene Space is, you mentioned, thriving. We're approaching 2,000 members.
Wow.
On the network, and we're getting about 2,000 hits a day now.
Oh my gosh. I'll tell you, man, this is awesome.
And listenership on Nazarene Radio Network, we're in the thousands nowadays, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember J.J. Rocks, that is on Sticks and Stones with me, he told me one day that he woke up in the morning and it was somewhere around 27,000 one morning, and I'm sitting over there shaking my head. I'm sitting over there going, how in the world is this possible? You know,
yeah,
and
really?
so You know, it's been great. It's been, like I said, a privilege to be a part of this whole thing. And as a matter of fact, we've actually kind of we've had some people contact us who a lot of people know who are going to be joining the Nazarene Radio Network here very shortly. As a matter of fact, and I'm really excited about this as well.
Yeah, we used to contact people and say, "Hey, would you like to do a show?" Now we've got people contacting us saying, "I'd like to bring my show over."
Yeah.
So it's great.
Well, especially when we get people who have been, you know, known in the Hebrew Roots community for quite some time. You know, we got
Rico
Cortez will be starting in 2 weeks. He'll be doing a live call-in show, as a matter of fact.
That's so amazing, Rico, and of course Eddie Chumney's been doing some shows for a while now.
Yep.
And so yeah, we're just it's just growing, and you know, one of the things we've managed to do is we're just on the leading edge of a very new technology, and that's very good because we're pioneers getting there first. And then more and more people are starting to get iTunes and be able to tune in with iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
And we're already there and established. So iTunes is, of course, a big piece of this. And in the next few years, you're going to be able to, and some people already have the capability, listen to iTunes while you're driving around in your car.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, Jim Morgan from Come Out of Her, My People, and Totora Not Totora was telling me that many times he goes and takes his iPod or his iPhone and plugs it into his car stereo and listens that way. He's driving down the road listening to the Nazarene Radio Network.
Yeah, you can get a little device now also, and that will allow you to take like an iPod or whatever, and it tunes into a radio station and it picks it up with the Bluetooth signal or with a jack plugged into it, and then it broadcasts it to a radio station on your car with a very short range radio signal. So you tune into like, you know, 88.3 FM or something like that, and you're listening to whatever is playing on your iPhone or your iPod. And so if you take your iPhone and set, you know, you can get the application to set up on your iPhone to listen to iTunes live.
Yep.
You've got the same ability to listen that you had with your regular radio.
Oh, without a doubt. And we've actually tapped into another piece of technology here as well. And James, I don't know if you're a pretty busy guy, so I don't know if you've caught on to this yet or not. But we've actually been able to simulcast many of the shows live.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Yeah, and that has been a lot of fun. We need to do a Clear Truth with you at some point live.
I would love to do that, because well, I'd like to take some questions, you know, because you know, we've got the answers for people, you know, so people can call in that have challenges, and we've got the answers. I did the Great Tour debate a few years ago, you know, with the Christian pastor at his church. And is the Torah for today? Needless to say, he's not, well, I'll just leave it that. We did the debate in 2004, and he hasn't invited us back, let's put it that way.
I've invited many of the pastors in the area over here to do something very similar. I sent out over 43 emails to 43 churches in my area, and none of them want to debate me on the Torah on the radio. None of them.
Well, he was ready to debate me. He thought, you know, this was easy, and it turned out not to be so easy. All right, but so things are really, really well for Nazarene Radio Network, and I think they will continue to do well, and we do have another project that we're working on in the future that will take it yet another step. And I won't say anything more right now, but in the near future I think we'll start spilling the beans about what that project is.
Absolutely. Well, James, thank you very much for having me on your program today. I very much appreciate it, and I'm very honored to be filling in for Larry. Big shoes to fill.
Yes. Well, and by the way, Larry is an attorney in the state of Texas. He has handled two cases for me with astounding results both times. If you need if you need legal help, contact Larry. You can reach him at lm@meadowsllp.com. That's his email address. So lm@meadowsllp.com if you need legal help, and he'll either be able to help you or put you in contact with the right attorney in your area that can. But this is not an advertisement or a commercial. It's just me recommending my attorney who's done well for me to you. That's it for this week, and we'll be back next week with another edition of Restoring Our Nation.